Give me that pudding. I've been nominated for some awards. This is very cool. I've hosted a few award shows, which is also cool. My first was the High Times Stony Awards in 2000, and the last was the Golden Globes in 2014. The Upright Citizens Brigade had a strong and early relationship with High Times, which was then a magazine filled with Jerry Garcia conspiracy theories and sexy centerfold pictures of weed. For you young listeners, the term magazine used to mean a collection of printed pages that you would hold in your hand and read by turning the pages. Still confused? Try this. Picture folding your MacBook and sticking it in your pocket. Oh, you kids don't use MacBooks anymore? You use eyelid screens and mind cameras? Oh, bully for you. I digress. Let's all just agree that acting awards are strange. They're based on the idea that a committee of a select few puts a bunch of very different performances next to each other and then decide who gets the pudding. Now, don't get me wrong. To be in the company of other great actors and valued for your work is a whole lot better than being ignored. Nothing is worse than being ignored. Glenn Close said it best when she told Michael Douglas in the romantic comedy Fatal Attraction, "I will not be ignored, Dan." She was so upset about being ignored, she cooked a bunny on the stove. You don't even want to find out what I would do. A lot of people don't know that I am always this fucking close to doing some crazy shit. Getting nominated for an award is very exciting, and anyone who says it's not is either lying or on a very strong beta blocker. You have a 1 in 5 chance of getting the pudding. That being said, I have not won very often. Always a bridesmaid, I guess. By that, I mean people are always mistaking me as someone from the movie Bridesmaids. I've also been mistaken as that girl from Mad TV, and Chris Rock once called me Rachel Dratch, proving once and for all that Chris Rock is horribly racist. The worst part of being nominated for any award is that, despite your best efforts, you start to want the pudding. You spend weeks thinking about how it doesn't matter and it's all just an honor, and then seconds before the name of the winner is announced, everything inside you screams, "Give me that pudding!" And then comes the adrenaline dump, followed by shame. You didn't even want the pudding, and here you are upset that you didn't get it. You think about all the interviews you did talking about the pudding, or all the interviews you passed on because you didn't want people to think you wanted that pudding too much. You leave the award show hungry and confused. To combat this, I decided to distract myself in that awkward and vulnerable moment the winner was announced. I decided to focus my attention on something I could control. Bits, bits, bits. The first time I was nominated for an Emmy, it was for Best On-Screen Orgasm in a Dramatic Civil War Reenactment. Just kidding. It was for Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Comedy for SNL. And as would become the norm, I was included in a great group of women whose work I admire. I had an idea we should all wear mustaches when our names were announced as nominees, and then I heard Sarah Silverman, who was nominated for Outstanding Lead Actress, was planning on doing the same thing. She had even brought her own mustache with her. I chalk it up to great minds. A quick scramble ensued, and I collected a series of props in hopes they would work. If I remember correctly, they consisted of some crazy glasses, an eye patch, and a monocle. You know, the things every girl must have in her purse when on the red carpet. I remember how fun it was asking the women if they wanted in on it and how quickly everyone said yes. Jane Krakowski, Kristen Wiig, Kristen Chenoweth, Elizabeth Perkins, and Vanessa Williams were all game. Since Vanessa's name was announced last, I thought it would be funny if we all did something stupid, and then Vanessa just shook her head like, "Hell no, I'm not doing the stupid bit." I called her from the car on the way to the show and started to feel better. First, because I had a secret, and that's always exciting. But second, because my brain was focusing on something besides the pudding. We all did the bit, but because we didn't let the producers know we were doing it, and it was the first award of the night, they didn't put our faces on the screen inside the auditorium, so it all kind of played to silence. This only goes to show the commitment of all those women to stick with the plan, no matter what. Julia Louis-Dreyfus wanted very badly to join in, even though she was in a different category, which shows you how much power distraction can hold. I ended up having a very fun night and coming to the realization that the less seriously I take these things, the better. I honestly don't even remember who won that year, Kristen Chenoweth. The following year, I was breastfeeding a 6-week-old Abel. I was too tired to think of bits, but my hormones were telling me to just jump on stage and grab the award before they announced the winner. Luckily, I had enough oxytocin floating around in my body that I didn't care or notice who won, Edie Falco. Jimmy Fallon hosted and crushed, and I sat in the front row and heckled like any good friend should, and then dragged my new mama ass to the after party with what Tina referred to as my impressive temporary rack. I broke my toe on the banquette I was dancing on. That's right, on. I acted like the blue-collar party machine I had been raised to be. John Hamm and I held Emmys that weren't ours. We called ourselves losers all night, and years later threw a loser's party where winners had to donate money to charity to get in. The next day, this mother of two woke up with a swollen foot and hobbled to the airport. Lucky for me, and deeply unlucky for him, I ran into my old friend Bradley Cooper, who was on the same flight that morning. I asked him to escort me to my seat. I imagine the paparazzi photos the next day lauding Cooper for helping an old and confused lady find her way. Then came 2011, the best pudding quest yet. A few weeks before the Emmys, I was having dinner with Martha Plimpton, Andy Richter, and his wife, writer Sarah Thayer. Andy and Sarah were some of the first people I met and hung out with when I came to New York in the mid-90s. They were already married then and had a duplex apartment where they threw great parties that brilliant writers like David Sedaris and David Rakoff attended. They were real adults at a time when I was still a struggling kid, and they were always generous and kind to me. At dinner, we all discussed a fun bit that could keep my mind off the pudding again. And I was reminiscing about the great old bits done by Harvey Korman and Tim Conway. I had loved one particular moment when, as soon as their names were called, each man just immediately got out of his seat as if he had won. They stood on stage together, and when the winner was announced, they both shook Chevy Chase's hand and sat back down. It was simple and funny and supportive and stupid, all great things. We decided that this year, Martha and I, along with our fellow nominees, should do something similar, but add in a beauty pageant element. I emailed my fellow nominees for Outstanding Lead Actress in a Comedy, Laura Linney, Edie Falco, and Melissa McCarthy, and they were all in, of course. I knew my girl Tina was down to clown, because she herself was breastfeeding at the time, and as history has shown, this is when a bitch is most likely to go off. I gave the producers just the right amount of info so they could shoot our bit properly this time. We had someone buy a crown and flowers, and slowly my craving for pudding vanished again. I desperately wanted to go up on stage first, because I thought the person who went up first would get the biggest laugh, but Edie Falco was first, alphabetically, and it seemed too grabby to ask her to switch. As luck would have it, Edie Falco emailed me a few days before and asked me if I would like to go on stage first. I pretended like I was doing her a favor, but I was super psyched about it. Rob Lowe and Sofia Vergara read my name, and I just got out of my seat and pretended I had won. Standing up there, I could feel the audience's delight and confusion, followed by pure joy when Melissa and the other women followed suit. Everybody added their own twist. Martha Plimpton screamed like she was Miss Virginia, Laura Linney pretended to wipe lipstick off her teeth, and Tina tried to kiss Jack McBrayer. We all came up on stage and held hands like we were in the final moments of a Miss America pageant, and I felt like I might die from happiness. When Melissa won, we all genuinely screamed with joy. Standing on stage being funny with those ladies was so much better than winning. I can only assume I didn't win. I forget who did. Melissa did. It doesn't matter. In 2012, I felt a little pressure to do something better, which isn't helpful because there's nothing worse than being the sweaty one in the group leading the charge. Plus, I was going to the Emmys for the first time without my husband of 10 years, and I kind of just wanted to hide. Instead, I sat next to Louis C.K. Louis really doesn't care about the pudding, which is one of the many things I love about him. I also love that he's really honest, gives great advice, and knows how to drive a boat. To combat my nerves, I picked a dress that made my boobs hang out, so people would be too distracted to ask me about my personal life. It was very eyes down here, guys. Because of our fun bit the year before, people had started asking me if I had something planned. And this made me sad and self-conscious. Then Julia Louis-Dreyfus called me. It was 2 hours before the Emmys, and I was already 7 hours into my pregame. There is an insane amount of industrial light and magic required to make me look like a pretty lady at an award show, and I will not say that the process is enjoyable. Julia said something to the effect of, "I think one of us will win. If I do, will you do this bit with me? And if you win, can I do it with you?" Suddenly, I was focused on something active and alive instead of worrying about my boob tape. Julia had the idea that we should hug and switch speeches so that the winner read the other woman's speech by mistake. I was so excited about doing the bit that I was hoping I wouldn't win. And I didn't. And I didn't care. Ultimate pudding switch. Hosting the Golden Globes in 2013 with my life partner, Tina, was so fun. You know, sometimes Tina feels like a very talented bungee jumping expert. All it takes is for Tina to softly say, "We can do this, right?" And suddenly I feel like I can jump off a bridge. Two things also helped me in my preparation for that year. I spent the first day of 2013 touring orphanages in Haiti as the ambassador of arts for worldwide orphans. Nothing reminds you of what is important more than being face-to-face with children who lack basic love and care. Plus, my separation had given me a major case of the fuckets. Ambivalence can be a powerful tool. To get ready for our first Golden Globes together, Tina and I spent a lot of time procrastinating and sending texts about how terrible it was going to be. Deep down, I wasn't worried because Tina is the finest joke soldier you could ever go to war with. She also keenly understands the importance of good lighting. We enlisted the help of our great friend and former SNL producer Mike Shoemaker, as well as America's sweetheart, Seth Meyers. We treated the whole thing like we were preparing for Weekend Update, only without a desk and with an audience of 30 million. And on the day of rehearsal, we were told that jokes often leak before the live show. So we stood in our fancy jeans and sneakers and delivered our monologue with the setups only, no punchlines. It was thrilling. When I walked out on stage that night, I realized I was actually a little nervous because I do a weird thing when I'm nervous where I tilt my head back like I'm super confident. This is my attempt to fake it till I make it, or at the very least, make it easier for someone to slit my throat. The jokes went well. The show was fun. Tina and I had the idea to pretend to be fake actors in the audience. I believe we were there representing the smash hit Dog President. We also decided to sit in the audience when our own category was announced and cozy up to some grade-A celebrity meat. Of the many things I learned from working at Saturday Night Live, one of them is to not overwhelm people with requests. So on the day of the awards, I simply asked George Clooney's people to check and make sure George was okay with me sitting next to him at some point during the broadcast. "Of course," said George's people after not asking him. I knew enough to not ask them to check with George and see if it was okay to sit on his lap. This was a request better saved for the last minute and in person. Or better yet, when the time came, I would just sit on his lap without even asking. As the old saying goes, don't ask for permission to sit on George Clooney's lap. Beg for forgiveness once you do. So, I sat on George's lap, and ever the pro, George asked me what kind of bit I was cooking up, and I told him, when they cut to me in the audience after announcing my nomination for Best Comedy Actress, I was going to act totally engrossed in talking to him. I told him I thought it would be funny if we were just flirting and laughing. He understood immediately and handed me a glass of champagne. I told him if I won, there was a very good chance I would kiss him hard on the mouth. And he responded, "That's not a bad Sunday." As the camera cut to me, he whispered in my ear, "The thing about making movies is..." There is a reason why Clooney is considered the best. Because he is. The lessons? Women are mighty. George Clooney loves bits. And doing something together is often more fun than doing it alone. And you don't always have to win to get the pudding. It is at this point that Julia Louis-Dreyfus's lawyers would like me to point out that she won the Golden Globe in 2013. It is also at this point that I would like to point out that I won a Golden Globe in 2014. I was sitting on Bono's lap this time, and I was genuinely surprised. And I am now forced to admit that pudding is delicious. Great acceptance speech. Feel free to use. I always assumed I'd be smooth and prepared when I won something, but adrenaline is a crazy bitch. I stumbled through my speech when I won some pudding, and I was too embarrassed to ever watch it. I had written an acceptance speech, but forgot all about it. So I thought I'd read it to you now. I think it sums me up pretty well, and I can't wait to use it one day. Hashtag God willing. What's up? How are you guys feeling tonight? I said, how y'all feeling tonight? How you guys feeling over here on this side? Let me hear you on this side. Oh, let me hear you over here on this side. How you guys feeling over here? Not gonna forget you guys in the balcony. Woo! I am here. because of you. I share this win with you. I believe it was Gandhi who said, winning is everything and the only thing. Big ups to Gandhi and Biggie. Big ups to Biggie. Can't forget Biggie, y'all. Thank you first to God and Buddha. And maybe these days it's a little more Buddha than God. You know what? Screw it. They're both dope. Honestly, most times I wish I was Jewish. They kiss their kids on the head a lot, and they seem to know how to argue better. Speaking of Jewish people, I would like to thank my agents, managers, lawyers, publicists, travel advisors, business managers, surgeons, OBGYNs, trainers, and neighbors, and every producer and writer I've ever worked with. Now on to politics. What's the deal, guys? Seriously, I mean, come on. Get it together. It's like, when are we gonna wake up? It's all crazy. Who's with me? Thanks for letting me get that off my chest. Okay, what else? I'm launching a jewelry line, and my pieces are in the lobby and available for sale, euros only. This is also a good time to mention my album is dropping. And by dropping, I mean someone is dropping it, and I need someone else to pick it up and make it. Thank you in advance, Diplo. Let's see, to all my fellow nominees, Lourdes Ciccone, Nancy Pelosi, Eddie Izzard, Animal from the Muppets, and the inimitable Maggie Smith. It's an honor. To my stunt woman, whose name I can't remember, but whose violent death I will never forget, my deepest thanks. To the love of my life, George Clooney, a man who wore me down with letters and phone calls until finally I gave in and let him have sex with me. You're welcome. And finally, I would like to salute our troops by singing a slow and racially inappropriate version of I Loves You, Porgy, from the classic musical Porgy and Bess.
Peace.